Charlie Brock is going to come and read our passage for today. You'll find it in Genesis chapter 28, and starting at verse 10, if you've got your Bibles or switch on your apps, Genesis 28, starting at verse 10. Thanks, Charlie.
Jacob's dream at Bethel. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending from it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, "I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised for you." When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." He was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, although the city used to be called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, "If God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking, and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear, so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God, and this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth."
So last week we started a series that is called Frontline. And you may, if you were here, you may remember it. I don't know if we can have the slide up, Doug. That would be brilliant so that we can start all that's there. And last week, as part of the session last week, we found that only 6% of the population of the United Kingdom attend a place of worship at least once a month. It's quite a small percentage, and represented by those red dots in the corner of that square of 100. 6% of the UK adult population attend a church to worship at least once a month. And last week we looked at the passage from 1 Peter chapter 1, the beginning of Peter's letter to those who are scattered and exiled. And he reminded them that they are a chosen people, an elect people, the people of God who gather together and who are sent out into the world to scatter across many different places during the week, to what we call the front lines. So whether it's the place that you live and you interact with your family or your neighbours or your community, a place that you go to be part of an organisation or a club, or where you volunteer, a place you go to work where you get paid to go to work, that is your front line. Those are the front lines that all of us have. Whatever role we have, whatever stage of life, we all have a front line position. It might be with our grandchildren, looking after them for a day. It might be with looking after elderly parents as carers. It could be a whole range of things, but all of us have a place that we call and can call our front line. It might be your college, your university, your school. It's all those places where the 6% gather every single day of the week, and then gather again on a Sunday to be encouraged and challenged and to offer worship to God. And it can feel a bit like being in exile. So if you missed last week, I hope that you might catch up. It's all available on YouTube, and you can catch it up there. And if you weren't here last week to take home a red dot that is a coaster, then please grab one of those before you go. Another thing we did last week at the end of our service was, you'll see there's a map in the foyer on one of the boards, and there are lots of red pins in it. And those red pins represent the front lines that we, the church, scattered to during the week. And so those that were here last week found a place on the map that is their front line. So if you weren't here last week, I'd love you just to take a moment and get a red pin and put it in the place so we can see how scattered we are during the week. You might be off the map as well, by the way, but put it as close as you can. We've got a few people who are off the map, so you can join them in various places if your front line is far away from Stoke and Newcastle. But please add your pin to that. It's a great representation of how scattered we are. And so we're exploring over these next few weeks this idea of front line. And today we're going to think about wherever we are. Wherever we are is the place where God can use us on those front lines. And we have an opportunity as the people of God, as the scattered people of God, to go to those places and make a difference. The challenge for most of us is that those places and those people that we interact with become too familiar. They're people and places that we meet every day often or every week. And so sometimes we can stop noticing the opportunities that God might give us in those particular places. It's just the routine part of our lives. It just is the mundane. And I know for many of you, you're facing incredible challenges at work. And it's easy just to move through the routines. But today I want us to think about how might we bring God into those places intentionally and to know that it goes with us as well. What if we go to those places expecting to see God in those places? What if when we walk out of a door during our day, we expect to see God in those places? Doug, could we just run the film now? Because I forgot it, but this will be a great place to put it in. Thank you. Yes, if you guys want to, sorry, I should have encouraged you.
Hours a day,
6 days a week,
whenever I'm needed,
every Saturday morning,
I spend my time
in a place that matters to God,
with people that matter to God,
my front line,
in the stresses,
successes,
problem solving,
tantrum resolving,
laughter,
teamwork,
jokes,
tears,
boredom,
tension,
cups of coffee,
cans of Coke.
God is working with me.
He helps me see what he sees.
Put here by God.
He knows the day ahead.
This place is rich with possibilities.
This is my front line.
And it's in those places that sometimes feel a bit unexpected where God might be and where we can turn those moments into times of transformation. And perhaps it is as simple as building the habit of noticing what God is doing and as he invites us to join in with him as well. There was a moment in the ministry of Jesus, there were many moments when he noticed people. He noticed Zacchaeus stuck up a tree and he stopped. He noticed a man who hadn't been able to walk for 38 years sat by the pool of Bethesda. There were lots of people there, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. They were there because they believed that when the waters of the pool started stirring, then the first one in it got healed. And Jesus stops and notices a particular person on that particular day who'd been sat there for 38 years. In John chapter 5 and verse 6, we pick up the story. When Jesus saw him lying there, he learned that he had been in this condition for a long time. He asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. And of course that caused a stir. The religious people were upset because it was on a Sabbath. But Jesus stopped and noticed on that particular day. And then in John chapter 5 and verse 19, we read this. Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can only do what he sees his Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son also does." He does what he sees the Father doing. That habit of noticing, that spiritual gift of noticing and of stopping and deciding, no, I'm going to join in with what the Father is doing in this particular moment. Now, there are some things you need to notice, aren't there? When your best friend has had a haircut, you need to notice, don't you, and tell them how wonderful it looks on that particular day. Very few people say that to me now. I don't know, but I cut it and nobody notices. But anyway, you can do better than that. Some of you will notice if your child goes missing, won't you? How many parents here will notice if their child goes missing? How many won't? Okay, you need some counseling. How many of you notice when the traffic light turns to red? Anybody? Fewer and fewer these days, don't you think? Yeah. And sometimes we stop noticing, don't we? Many of you stop noticing the speed limit, don't you, when you're out driving, because I've seen you. Sometimes we start noticing. If you're about to buy a particular car, what happens? If you're thinking about buying a particular model of a car, what begins to happen? You see them everywhere, don't you? You notice them everywhere. See, we have got the skill. It's just whether we will employ it in the places where it needs employing most, and that is on our front lines. In the Bible, we tend to notice all the very dramatic ways that God does something. The burning bush, the fire on a mountain. We read about the stories when Jesus did amazing things because he stopped and noticed. And sometimes we think, yeah, I'm just looking for the big thing to happen. If God just turns up, if there's a fire, if there's a loud voice from heaven and tells me what to do, then I'll join him in what he's doing. But I think God works in very different ways. Ways that all of us can get involved in and learn the habit. There's a lovely verse in Ecclesiastes and chapter 9, verse 11. It says, "I've seen something else under the sun. The race is not to the swift or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise or wealth to the brilliant or favor to the learned, but time and chance happen to them all." Time and chance. They happen to all of us, don't they? A particular time, in a particular place, when we feel, oh, this is a chance meeting or a chance opportunity. Time and chance happen to all of us. We might not be the fastest, we might not be the wealthiest, we might not be the brightest, but time and chance happen to us all. And it's those moments when God is inviting us in to be part of his unfolding story. They happen to me. Stuff happens around us every day. And then we have to choose whether we're going to step in and be part of it or whether we're going to rush on by. In a world where everything and everybody seems in a rush, where football managers are sacked in a matter of days, where workers get discarded with an email, where the slow get honked, where the B student gets pressurized, where the good isn't good enough, it has to be outstanding. What would it take for us to notice and slow down? To slow down enough to see what God is doing in the places, in the front lines that we're going to be in. And this is where this story of Jacob comes in. A great example of someone who stopped and noticed eventually, so that something began to happen in that moment and also for his future. A quick biography of Jacob, for those of you who are unaware of it or parts of it. Jacob is the son of Isaac, so he's the grandson of Abraham, the one that God called to build a nation, to build a people. You can read Abraham's story in Genesis chapter 12. Now, Jacob also has a twin brother, and his name is Esau. Jacob's name means to grasp the heel. And he was given that name because when he was born, Esau came out first, but then Jacob came out second, holding on to the heel of Esau. He was fighting to get out first, I think. And the rest of the story proves that point, because they didn't get on even before they were born. Now, Esau was red-headed, a hot-tempered hunter, very skilled hunter. Jacob, he was a scheming, cunning, lying brother. Yet it seems like God works through the second born. Have you found that in life? That God works through the second born? Amen, anybody? How many amens of second borns have we got here today? Me too. God works through the second born, and I can prove it from the Bible, okay? Isaac was the second born to Abraham, and Jacob was the second born to Isaac. There's the proof. That's all you need. Isaac loved Esau, but God's plan involved Jacob. In Genesis chapter 25, we have the story of how Jacob tricked Esau out of his birthright as the eldest, and he got his brother Esau to sell his birthright to him for a bowl of stew. You might have heard the phrase, a mess of pottage. Have you heard that phrase? A mess of pottage. This is the definition of a mess of pottage. It's something immediately attractive but of little value and taken foolishly and carelessly. It's taken in exchange for something less tangible but immensely more valuable. And so he sells his birthright thinking, you know what, I don't even know if I'm going to get through the next day, let alone at the end of it. And so for a bowl of lentil stew, Jacob gets Esau's birthright. That was the first bit. And then Jacob and his mum now trick the blind Isaac to give his blessing to Jacob instead of to Esau. You can read about that in the chapters before Genesis 28. So as well as a mess of pottage, there was also a mess of parentage as well. And so Jacob gets the birthright, he gets Isaac's blessing, and even though he's tricked him, it still counts. It's legally binding. And so he takes that blessing with him. After all of this, Jacob very wisely leaves home because Esau is out to kill him. And he begins to realize that his future lies well away from Canaan, the promised land. And his hope, and God's hope of building a nation, is now wrapped up in Jacob traveling east and marrying from outside his own community. God has remarkable ways, doesn't he, of continuing his story and using the most incredible means in order to do it. God goes with him. And don't forget, Jacob, how many sons did he have? 12. Abraham had many sons. We sang that the other day. Jacob had 12 sons. Of course, Joseph was one of those, the youngest. And so the story we know continues. God's plan to build a nation that will lead to Jesus was not going to be halted by anything or anyone. And Jacob went out the front door on that particular day wondering if there was a purpose to his life anymore as he was running away from his family. Wondering if God could use a person who was messed up and confused. Wondering if God still could use him. And so we read in Genesis 28 that after leaving Beersheba, which is where he was at that time, he was headed all the way back to Paddan Aram. Sounds like a Kylie Minogue song to me, that Paddan Aram. But anyway, also called... That's gone over the top of many of you this morning, hasn't it? Yeah, but anyway, never mind. It's also called Haran, okay? The place that Abraham's dad in Genesis chapter 12 settled on the way to Canaan. The place that he stopped, Abraham's dad. But for Jacob, this was going to be a journey of 550 miles. It would take him a long time. I mean, Genesis 28, we read that after leaving Beersheba, which was his home, commentators think he might have been about 70 years old at this point, okay? He wasn't a young man. They try and track it back from other dates in the Bible, and they've got to maybe around 70 years old. He may have traveled around 60 miles, and he settles in for a good night's sleep. And it's in that place that God makes himself known. This place of exile. This place that he was going to as he left the front door of his house in Beersheba. And through the emotions that might have included fear and anger and frustration and the feeling of loss and disappointment and uncertainty and loneliness, maybe even he carried arrogance and self-confidence into that space. It was there that he arrived on that particular day. The Bible very helpfully just calls it a certain place, just an ordinary place on his journey. And there he is. I wonder if when you go out of your front door in the morning, whether you feel as if you're just going to an ordinary place where you're not expecting anything to happen. Or maybe you arrive on your front line feeling frustrated and angry or fearful, disappointment or uncertainty. And yet within all of those emotions, in all of the brokenness of this man, God makes himself known right in that certain place. Chapter 28:11, when he reached a certain place, he stopped. He stopped. And God met him in that ordinary place. Of course, we know theologically that God was already there, of course. Already there waiting for Jacob to stop and begin this journey. And it was in that place, that ordinary place, that God gave Jacob a captivating dream for what would happen next. Now, I'm not suggesting you go to work tomorrow morning and you take a nap before anything else happens to say, God, can I have a captivating dream before I start today? But I want you to go out of your front door tomorrow morning, wherever it is you're going, knowing that wherever you arrive, God is going to already be there. See, Walter Brueggemann, the theologian, he says, the world is a place of such meetings. The world, wherever you are, it's a place of such meetings. And this is what Jacob began to realize, not only having this captivating dream that we read about, but he began to realize that God was right beside him. Verse 13 says, God was there, a compelling presence right there. He began to know through this dream that God was going to use him as a continuous blessing to the people that he would meet and to the ongoing purposes of God in and through him. And he knew that God wasn't going to leave him, that God was going to be this constant companion. Wouldn't it be good to know that tomorrow morning when you walk out of your front door into the place that is your front line? And you can. That's the beauty, because God is there waiting for you. Jacob had walked an ordinary walk on his long journey to Haran. He fell asleep with his head resting on an ordinary stone in an ordinary place, and there he began to dream. He dreamt about angels on a celestial escalator going up and down from heaven. It's interesting, it may be completely irrelevant, but the angels start ascending rather than descending. Maybe the angels are on earth anyway, do you think? And we just have to notice them. They're running up and down between heaven and earth. And then he sees God. In verse 13, the NIV says that God was above it. If you look in the footnote of your NIV Bible, it says God was there beside him. And scholars are not clear as to which one was good. Well, whether he's above, God is above you, or whether he's beside you, you can know that he's there for you. God isn't traveling on the escalator. He's there. He's walking with you as we continue to move east away from Eden to find the home that God has for us. In Genesis chapter 11, you might remember that there the people were building a tower to God when he was already there. They were just so arrogant, they thought they needed to get higher, but God is there. Jacob receives the covenant promise of God that his father Isaac and his grandfather Abraham had already had. It was the same promise that they had, to go and be a blessing wherever it is he goes. And that's the promise for each one of us, wherever our front lines are. This lying, manipulative, deceiving man received God's reminder, I am with you, I will watch over you, I will bring you back, I will not leave you. So no wonder he says, surely the Lord is in this place and I was not aware of it. It's a very humble response, isn't it? It's a response that says, I should have been aware of it, but I was so caught up in what I was doing, I failed to notice, God, that you were here. He hasn't abandoned the world as a failure. He hasn't abandoned any of us. He wants to remind us there's a purpose for you in the place that you go to. He's at work and on every street corner, in every workplace, in every college, in every school, in every family, if we will notice. So what might God already be doing on your front line? With the people that you meet, with the family that you live with, that you share with the children you care for. What might God already be doing in those ordinary places But you see, this is what happens next. God transforms every ordinary place into a holy space. See, all of that was part of his dream. But when you wake up, what are you going to do with the dream that you've just had? A dream just stays a dream unless we're prepared to do something about it, unless that dream changes Jacob's focus and his direction. As Jacob woke up, he was filled with hope and he got on with the future that God had now given him with renewed energy and determination. Jacob, no children yet to fulfill his promise, sent away by his parents, his brother out to kill him, gets ready for the rest of this journey because he's found a purpose now. He's found a reason why he had to go out of that front door. He's found a reason why he ended up in that certain place on that particular day, because God is still going to use him as he rediscovers God's purposes for his life where he is, as he recaptures the promises that once he felt he'd lost. And he's so captivated by it that he can't wait to go to a house of worship. He can't wait to end up in a place where there is a house of worship already. He creates that place as a place of worship himself. He sets up a place to remember this encounter. He becomes a worshiper in that place at that particular moment. And that's the challenge for us as well. Can we have a confident vision for the ordinary places that we will be at this week? Can we have a confident vision because God is the one who is taking us to that place and meeting us at that place and equipping us for the people and the work that we do? He's always at work. He's waiting for us to see what the Father's doing and to join in with him. And our front line becomes a place where heaven touches earth once again. Notice the stairway to heaven rests on the earth. And you'll be able to see those places. Because then it gives us this changed perspective. It changes my understanding of God's mission in the place that I'm in. When we're scattered in all corners of this area, it gives us a fresh perspective of what God might do. As the great philosopher Jimmy Page once said, the aim of life is to be a rock and not a roll. You might want to put that on a plaque somewhere or tune into the Led Zeppelin song, Stairway to Heaven, instead. And it is this rock, this stone, the pillar that becomes the sign of our response to recognizing God's presence in the places we go, wherever we are. Jacob built a pillar not to make a name for himself like they did at the Tower of Babel. He made a pillar to celebrate God's presence, a reminder that every single moment is filled with God's presence in those places. And he poured oil over it, not to make the rock sacred, but to recognize that God brings a sense of his presence into that holy space in that moment. When we see God, when we feel him, sense him, hear him in those ordinary places, they are infused with his presence and we find hope for those moments. So wherever you are, wherever you join in with what God is doing, that place becomes the house of God because you are there. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 3:16, don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's Spirit lives in you? And this is our commitment. This is our commitment, a clear commitment to joining God in what he's doing. My commitment to that place, verse 20 to 22, then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and he will watch over me on this journey I'm taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God and this stone that I've set up as a pillar will be God's house and all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. This is his vow, his clear commitment to responding to what God is saying. I commit myself to God and to his purposes wherever I am this week. And having made that commitment, chapter 29 and verse 1 simply says, then Jacob continued on his journey. In Genesis 35, we come towards the end of that journey, then God said to Jacob, go up to Bethel and settle there and build an altar there to God who appeared to you when you were fleeing from your brother Esau. Do you see how God uses these moments? So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, get rid of the foreign gods you have with you and purify yourselves and change your clothes. Then come, let us go up to Bethel, the place, that certain place, once again, where I will build an altar to God who answered me in the day of my distress and who has been with me wherever I have gone. That place that he named becomes the place he returns to, having fulfilled God's plans and purposes and knowing that God has used him powerfully. So every time you step out of the door and go to wherever it is that you will be going, go expecting to have an encounter with God, wherever you are. Maybe today you've missed that. And you look back and you think, I've missed those places. I've missed seeing what God has been doing. Well, maybe your commitment today is to open your eyes once again, to be available for whatever it is he wants to do, to see your front line through God's eyes, to notice what he is already doing and to join in, because that's his invitation. And those places become the very house of God itself. You were given a postcard when you came in. If you haven't got one, if you can just indicate and somebody will bring that to you. I want us just to take a few moments just to quietly look at that card and some of the questions that are on the back of that. We'll just be still before God this morning and ask the Holy Spirit just to reveal to us what our response needs to be to who he is and what he's given to us today. Let me pray for you today. Holy Spirit, will you ignite us with your passion? Will you fill us with your power? Will you call us to your purpose? Thank you for all the places that we will be in this week. May they become houses of yours, as we carry your good news with us in how we work and how we talk, to be your people, fulfill your purposes. I pray for each person here today, in all those places that they've identified as their frontline spaces. I pray, God, that you will go ahead of them, be behind them and around them, that you'll show them even more of your love for them, and that we will have the joy of seeing you at work in those places and those people who you call us to. Thank you that we go in the power of your Spirit to the work that you've already prepared for us. Fill us again, I pray, in your name. Amen.